Our next presentation will be presented by Taylor Deal, distribution of Helicoverpa-zea and Heliothus virescens in cotton and soybean landscapes.
Good afternoon. My name is Taylor Deal, and I'm a graduate student at Mississippi State University. And today I want to talk to you about the distribution of the Heliothion complex in cotton and soybean landscapes. Talking about the Heliothion complex, more specifically Helicoverpa-zea and Heliothus virescens. Virescens, more commonly known as the budworm, and zea, more commonly known as the bollworm. They're both pests in cotton and soybeans, and you might be asking, well, why do we care where they are in the landscape? You know, as long as they're not in my field, they're not my problem. Well, we can't all take that outlook on things, and they're more closely tied than you might first look at. Soybeans are actually a key component in the natural refuge concept of BT cotton right now. And there's increased interest from producers and industry to have access to these transgenic varieties of soybeans to help manage and protect their crop against the Lepidopteran pest. So, but before we can move to those BT soybeans, we must reevaluate what role the soybean plays in the natural refuge system. And I would just like to start off with some general biology that will be a key role in the further research. The eggs are laid singularly on the plant. They are white and spherical in shape, and they're generally hatch in 3 to 4 days. Once they hatch, the larvae stage will rest about 15 to 30 days, depending on what they're feeding on or where they found in the landscape. And they will move through 5 instars, and once they reach that 5th instar, their sole purpose will to be to find the ground and pupate. They are direct feeders, often feeding on reproductive structures such as corn ears, cotton bolls, soybean pods, etc. Once they pupate, this time period will last approximately 14 days, but another part of our research shows that this is highly determined on temperature and water factors, and they can actually pupate much longer. And how and when they pupate can directly affect where they go in the landscape. Once they do emerge, the adult stage will last 2 to 3 weeks, and they're very strong flyers. They're found throughout North America, through most of North America. And in Mississippi, and predominantly most of the Mid-South, we can expect 3 to 5 generations per year. And just a little background on the BT cotton. It was approved for commercial use by the EPA in 1995, and the first was Bolgar cotton by a Monsanto company. And this presented a single crystalline toxin, Cry1AC. And this provided essentially complete control of the budworm and pink bollworm, but zea was found to have a higher natural tolerance to the BT toxins. In 2003 and 2005, dual gene cottons were released with Bolgar 2 by Monsanto Company, partnered the Cry2AB gene with the Cry1AC, and Wide Strike with the Cry1F partnered with the Cry1AC. And now I think on limited release we have Twin Link by Bayer, and these dual gene cottons provide better control, but some individuals are still able to develop and come through these dual gene cottons. Originally the BT cotton required a structured refuge of non-BT cotton. This was presented as 5% embedded, 5% unsprayed, and 20% sprayed. And through extensive research efforts, these structured refuges of non-BT were found to have minimal contribution to producing susceptible individuals to the population. And it was also found that non-cotton crop posts, such as grain sorghum, peanuts, soybeans, were significant contributors to the population. And in 2006, the natural refuge concept was adopted and implemented in place of that required non-BT refuge. So nowadays, we try to strive for the high dose and refuge strategy. High dose meaning we want those toxins in the BT to be high. Low toxins, low dosage will speed up the problems and resistance, and the refuge strategy produces those susceptible individuals. And just kind of while we're doing this research, cotton acreage has declined substantially in Mississippi and across a lot of the Mid-South. And those acres are replaced with corn and soybeans. So soybean may even be a bigger role in that natural refuge system than it once was. There's growing interest again from producers and industry to have commercial access to these transgenic soybeans, and rightfully so. BT has been a great tool in our production system, as we see in cotton and corn. But before we can move on, there's a lot of flags being thrown up again, the soybean is valued as a key host. And, you know, if we introduce these BT soybeans, what is that going to do for the refuge system for cotton? Questions we have to ask ourselves is, where is Zaea inflorescence laying eggs in the landscape? And is there preference between cotton and soybean? And is there differences in overposition between Zaea inflorescence? So this study was conducted at the North Farm in Starkville, Mississippi. We used 20 foot by 20 foot screen cages, and we placed them over three rows of soybeans and adjacent three rows of cotton. We simulated planting for wheat beans because that is when we typically have the most pressure from Lepidopteran pests. These were planted on 38-inch rows, and we wanted to release these moths when both crops were at peak bloom. Because we're dealing with moths, we're dealing with nectary feeders, so we wanted those crops to be the most attractive. Once the cages were erected, we released 25 adult male and 25 adult female in each cage, and again, when these crops were at optimum attractiveness. For soybean, that would be R2 full flower, and cotton around the third, fourth week of bloom, but again, it's pretty steady throughout the year, as we well know. We repeated these methods with fluorescence as well. And we sampled 3 days after infestation because we know those eggs will hatch at the fourth day. We needed a sample before those eggs hatched. And we sampled by removing plants from 5 foot a row from the center row of cotton and center row of soybean. We chose the center row to avoid interference between the crop and the screen cage. And once the plants were removed, we visually sampled for number of eggs and location on which these eggs were oviposited on. And here is my first figure. Let me take a minute and set this figure up. On our y-axis we have eggs per plant, and our x-axis we have crop. And this is comparing species, fluorescence being on the left, Zaea being on the right. And if you look towards the left half of this figure, you can see cotton, my first point, around 2 eggs per plant, but on soybean, fluorescence nearly 8 eggs per plant, significantly more eggs from fluorescence on soybean than cotton. And for Zaea, around 2 eggs for soybean and 3 eggs for cotton. And this is the same data, just looking at it comparing crop wise, set up a similar way, left half cotton, right half soybean. You can see in cotton, fluorescence and Zaea are pretty similar, around 2 to 3 eggs per plant. However, on soybean, we see the significant difference of more fluorescence eggs on soybean than Zaea. And we looked at the cages because we weren't expecting this, and we had one cage at 96%. We thought that might be pulling the data. But if you look at all four replications, all four hold true that in this study, fluorescence preferred the soybean over the cotton. So what can we draw from this? The eggs for both Zaya and Virescence were distributed in cotton and soybean. There was a significant difference in the proportion of eggs laid on soybean between Virescence and Zaya. And in contrast to past knowledge, at least in our study, Virescence may have a preference of soybean over cotton, and at the very least, no preference of cotton over soybean. So we can conclude that, you know, the eggs are in soybean as well. So soybean is still a key factor, and again, maybe even more so since there's so many more acres than there once was. And I would like to thank my co-advisors, Dr. Angus Catchall, Dr. Jeff Gore, and my committee, Drs. Fred Musser, Don Cook, and Michael Caprio, my fellow graduate students, Ms. Kathy in the Insect Rearing Department, my student workers and summer help. I'd like to thank Mississippi State University and Monsanto Company for funding of this project. And with that, I will take any questions. Yes, sir. Okay, the question was if we use colony insects. These were field collected. Azalea was collected from Crimson off roadside clover, and the Virescence was collected off of chickpeas in Stoneville. They were no more than three generations removed from the field. Yes, sir. There were some, but that's one reason we used the 20x20 cages instead of the 6x6, give them more room, and we didn't have as much problem with that.
Any additional questions? All right, thank you, Taylor.
Thank you.